here are some of the top misconceptions about betrayal trauma. Number one, some people believe betrayal trauma is actually just a fancy or over-the-top term for severe heartbreak. And I do get where people are coming from. It seems like there is a new term for everything every other day. And so if they hear something new, they're quick to dismiss it. But for those that have been through it, they know this is not just another one of those throwing a label on something for a label's sake. Betrayal can genuinely be traumatic because it really does affect your view and your relationship with reality. Because being lied to repeatedly, being gaslit, being deceived, having timelines distorted, rewriting of the past, those affect you at a fundamental level. Those are things that impact every single thing that you do. And so even though it's just the relationship from one perspective, it really does reframe everything that your brain is doing in terms of how it understands its own life, its own safety, and reality. Another misconception is that the main pain point is tied to the physical intimacy. Now, obviously, this point is painful. And I've even had a handful of people leave comments saying, well, this is the problem with monogamy. You make such a big deal about physical intimacy. If we were just more casual about that, none of this would really be that big of a problem. I get what they're saying, but I think it's frankly too idealistic. It's not realistic to how people actually behave, but it misses the point entirely because the pain is often more so tied to the fact that someone was able to look you in the eye and let you live inside a false reality. The pain isn't just about the physical intimacy. It's about the hundreds of choices, cover stories, deleted texts, and manipulation that made the betrayal possible in the first place. And it's these distortions that lead people to become so preoccupied with things like obsessively rebuilding timelines, going back and forth between what they really believe and trying to give someone the benefit of the doubt, and feeling like they need every single detail, constantly checking phones, constantly monitoring. Another big misconception is that you just need better coping strategies. Now, don't get me wrong, coping strategies can be helpful to survive the day, but they usually do not resolve the unconscious emotional charge underneath the trauma. Almost nobody's issue is that they haven't gotten enough tips or enough little techniques they can do through the day. It's that their nervous system and their unconscious mind are still reacting as if the threat is somehow alive now. It's unprocessed still. Another common misconception about betrayal trauma is that time is enough on its own to heal it. Time can create distance, which can be useful, but it doesn't automatically process the trauma. People can be years out and still get activated by a song, by a restaurant, by a name, by a delayed text. And so many of these things can continue because there are practical issues that have not been resolved. Maybe you're still with the person who's been cheating on you. Maybe they're still continuing in their unfaithfulness. Maybe you've just been trying to stuff it down and ignore it, and that's why it's still continuing. Or maybe that has stopped. Maybe you've left, but it still is affecting you years later because you've not done the work or had someone help you do the work of processing those deeper wounds. Another misconception is if they stop cheating, then you should feel safe again. And this is extremely frustrating if you're the betrayed partner. Safety does not just automatically return the moment that the behavior stops. The body does not instantly believe, and nor should it believe, that the danger is instantly gone. Trust has to be rebuilt. It has to be through consistent action. Your body does need to catch up to your mind at some point if it really is over, especially if you've left the situation, for example. Another common misconception is that forgiveness and trust are more or less the same thing, that they're interchangeable. But they're not at all the same process. Forgiveness is internal emotional release. Trust is evidence-based. You can forgive and not feel safe, and you can also feel safe and not forgive. Another misconception is that if you still have triggers, that must mean that something is wrong or that you've made the wrong choice. Triggers don't automatically mean failure. They just mean that your nervous system, your mind, your body have still linked certain external cues to danger. And the goal is not to shame the trigger or be ashamed that you're still struggling with something. And it's also not to just avoid everything. The goal is to process that emotional charge so that the trigger over time loses its power. Another misconception is that the betrayed partner is often dramatic, paranoid, or controlling after discovering the infidelity. What looks like paranoia from the outside is actually hypervigilance. If someone's reality was manipulated, their mind will start looking for additional threats. It might not be sustainable behavior, but it is perfectly acceptable and understandable, at least early on. Another misconception is that the betrayed partner just has trust issues. I think that's a very lazy label. Many betrayed people do not have a general inability to trust. They're often not untrusting people. Oftentimes, they were more trusting than most going into the relationship. And so this is very rarely ever a character flaw. It's more of an injury that needs to be healed. This one might surprise you, but another misconception is that couples therapy is always the right first step. Sometimes it is, but sometimes it isn't. Sometimes couples therapy can make things worse when there's still betrayal, gaslighting, and manipulation present. If the therapist treats it like just a standard communication problem, then the betrayed partner could end up feeling blamed for their trauma responses while the deception is being minimized. If there is not real acknowledgement by both the unfaithful partner and whoever's doing the counseling, that manipulation and reality distortion is the first problem to address, then it could end up doing more harm than good. It might be better to get individual help first. Another misconception is that both people are equally responsible for the affair. People love to throw out language about, you know, it takes two to tango. And it is true that both people may have contributed to relationship dynamics, but only one person chose the deception. It goes without saying that there are a lot of different ways that someone could have addressed the pre-existing problems in the relationship other than cheating. Another misconception about betrayal trauma is that the person who cheated just needs to apologize. An apology is not the same thing as repair. Real repair requires genuine ownership. It requires transparency, emotional presence, sitting with the damage without rushing the betrayed partner to be okay. Mere promises don't fix anything. Consistent, verifiable change does. Another misconception is that if you stay, you're weak. Many people frame it as though it is an act of disrespect to yourself to stay in a relationship where someone cheated on you. This is completely oblivious. I feel like this often comes from, frankly, very young people or very bitter people. It almost never accounts for any nuance of having a shared life, having kids, having joint finances, having joint businesses that you own together. Ultimately, it might be worth disentangling all those things. And it also fails to ignore the nuance of someone who genuinely made an awful series of mistakes back to back to back, but is now genuinely doing the work, and it's someone that you choose to forgive and you choose to love. People are free to go whichever path they want. And it frankly does just strike me as quite bitter when people get mad at someone for trying to make things work. Another huge misconception is that healing means getting back to who you were before. You can't go backward. Healing requires integrating the experience, rebuilding self-trust before anything else, and being able to rebuild autonomy and have your own life at the center of your life, where what they did to you is no longer the defining feature. Another big misconception is that you need closure from the betrayer to be able to heal. Closure can help, but they're often not even good at giving it, even if they want to. You might never get the full truth. You might never get remorse. You might never get someone taking accountability. You're able to create your own closure by deciding for yourself why it happened, by deciding for yourself what it means. Another misconception is conflating intrusive thoughts with obsession. People think that just because the thought keeps popping into your mind about it, that you must be obsessing over it. And they can feel very similar. But with intrusive thoughts specifically, it's not voluntary. Your mind perceives it as a threat. And so it keeps, with a lot of intensity, bringing it back to the forefront of your attention to solve that threat, to complete the unfinished story, or to prevent future pain, to make sure it never happens again. And it's not convinced yet that it won't happen again. It's not convinced yet that you understand it. So it keeps pushing it forward for analysis, even though it's often more of an emotional wound that needs healed. Related to that, a lot of people assume that they need to understand why it happened to be able to feel better. Insight is not the same thing as resolution. It often is a small part of it, but there are plenty of people who understand the affair logically and still feel panic in their chest. They're still playing those mental movies on repeat. They still feel a sense of heaviness about their day. The unconscious mind does not heal just because the conscious mind has an explanation. And then I want to end with a really practical one. One of the biggest misconceptions about betrayal is that you have to decide right now whether you're staying or you're leaving. In the beginning, especially within the first couple days, weeks, and months, the real priority is not forcing a permanent decision. It's getting regulated enough, healed enough to be able to make wise decisions moving forward. And a lot of people make this especially difficult because they will treat their own dysregulation as signs, one way or the other, of, well, this means that I should stay because I'm feeling better today. The next day is a hard day. That means I shouldn't stay. Separate those two out. There's your own healing, and then there's your decision making. And there can be some back and forth, but overall, those are two separate categories. And then also remember that it doesn't have to be one decision. You can choose to stay for another day. You can choose to stay for another week. You can choose to stay for another month. There are some people who talk about quitting smoking who say that one of the best mental frames that they have around it isn't, I am no longer a smoker, but it's the idea of, I am choosing not to smoke today. Tomorrow, who knows? But today, I'm not smoking. And you can adopt a similar mindset of, I'm willing to try today. And then tomorrow comes, and you're free to change your mind at any point and say, yeah, this is actually not worth it. Now, at some point, promises do become helpful. Commitments and long-term decision-making do become helpful. But initially, you are fully allowed to take it one day at a time to decide whether or not you're going to continue. More practically, it's usually not one day at a time. Most people think more in terms of couple weeks, couple months at a time. So like, let's see where we're at the end of next month and go from there. If there are any other common misconceptions, I'd love to hear your thoughts. If there's any that you disagree with me about, or you think that the original misconception that I said was actually true, feel free to share your perspective as well.